You are listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. This is where women in midlife come for inspiration, motivation, and sometimes a little education to help them flourish after 40. Don't forget to hit that subscribe or follow button so you don't miss an episode. Now let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Midlife with Courage. I am Kim Benoit, and I am your host, and I'm so very happy to have you here. I'm also very happy to have my guest here with me today. Her name is Sharon Nielsen. Welcome to the podcast. And I'm pretty sure I said that.
Perfect. You said it amazing. Thank you.
Okay, great. Sharon, why don't you tell us? They're going to hear your accent, so they're going to know where you're from. Tell the listeners what you want them to know about you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm from Australia. I'm from the east coast of Australia. So we do say we all have different accents depending on where we come from, which is, I think, the same as the US. But I'm a registered nurse and have been for many years, probably over 30 years now, training in the old system where we trained in the hospitals and then also obviously traveling through the university system and progressing. I am also a mum, so I've got two beautiful, I keep saying teenagers, but they're actually not anymore. One is about to turn 19 and the other one's 22. She's just turned 22, so oh, they're not teenagers, but they're gorgeous. Divorced. And probably in that time of my life where I'm starting to re-feel about who I was prior to all of the life constraints that we seem to end ourselves into, thinking that this is the way our life is supposed to be. So, in what I mean by that is that I've created a wellness business out of a personal need. I realized that through my marriage, I was probably not seen as I anticipated I would be. I think I was also limited a lot because of maybe their insecurities and their need to feel like important. So it's that privilege that sits within the marriage conversation that I think probably very naively thought, oh, yeah, this will get better. Don't worry about it. And all of that sort of thing. And I think that really what happened was that I subtly changed who I was, and that really started to affect my health. Not from a physical perspective, I would say, but I certainly carried more weight than I was happy to do. But I then tried to counteract that with lots of exercise. And then learning from that, I think I realized that the significance of stress in our nervous system is something that actually you really have to nurture from the ground, and that it doesn't matter how much exercise you do and how much nutrition and how much you try and talk yourself out of it, if your body doesn't feel safe and if you don't feel safe in your heart, it just doesn't work. And all we end up doing is driving ourselves into the ground. And so that was something that I didn't really understand until I left and then had the sort of repercussions of trying to then deal with the guilt and the what now, why has this happened to me? And I didn't see this coming, and all of that sort of thing. And then turned it all around into the, you know what, this is an amazing opportunity and an experience to say how clever I was to navigate this journey. And now I think, like, I kept in the back of my mind going, women are so much cleverer than this. Like, why do we end up in a scenario where we're, oh, is this all there is? Like, when you know in your mind and in your heart, you are capable of so much more. And so that's become the ethos of my wellness business, Eternal Her, which has become something that I want you to climb the biggest mountain you want to climb if that's what you want to do. But if you don't want to do that, then that's okay. Like, you live life to who you want to be. And I think that part of the health and wellness journey is that doesn't happen overnight. And there's a whole bunch of barriers and personal issues that you have to reclaim and push through. And that just takes time. So part of the coaching is like looking at that, but also looking at factors like, it is diet and wellness. It is about your exercise. It is about your hydration. It is about how you manage your stress and all of that kind of thing. Because at the end of the day, the resolution of all of the dysfunction that's occurring hopefully comes into a package where you know you're running at peace and in line with where you want to be for life. So that's me, and that's my journey. Like, I feel like I'm still on the journey.
Of
But I kind
course.
of feel like I'm getting better.
Yes. We're all on the journey. We're just in different places, I think. But yeah, so much to dig into there. Before we talk about what we wanted to talk about, can you share with me a time when you showed courage or you felt courageous?
It probably was that night where my ex-husband at the time had said to me quite regularly, and this was always part of our conversation, which is interesting that I now pinpoint this particular time, but he had always, I think, verbally had told me that I wasn't this and I wasn't that, and I could look better and I could exercise. And then he would say, "You just bore me and I don't love you," and all of this kind of verbal stuff that kind of perpetually what I would end up doing is jumping into hamster cycle wheel where you would try to do better while they still sat there and just went, "No." So this particular day, I actually went, "You know what?" Because he was just saying, "It's not working. It's not working." And usually when he would exclaim that, I would be like, "Oh, what do I need to do to fix this?" And I just turned around and I said to him, "You know what? I agree. I completely and utterly agree." And I at the time didn't realize what this journey that I was about to launch into, because obviously you then walk back into your bedroom and burst into tears and then just go, "What have I just done?" like kind of thing. But actually what I realized, and I had lots of visual situations where I felt so isolated. Like that was the first thing that I realized, was there people who go through a divorce, like a lot of the time there's so much pain that leads up to that point where you go, "I'm done. I've had enough. But now what do I do?" kind of thing. And no one wants to talk about that space because it triggers people so much about their own journey. But at the time, I remember in my mind, could visualize this cliff and it was black. It was like a black abyss that all I could see was blackness, but I was standing and I can still see it. And it's this narrow edge, but there was a like a rock wall behind me, so I knew I couldn't go back and I couldn't see to go left or right, sort of thing. All I knew was I had to step off the edge, and I was a bit like, "Oh." And being a nurse, we will do what we need to do and we will try and think outside the box, but you are very much practical in your mindset. Like you're okay, I know the road because I know where the solution is. Whereas this was one of those things where I was like, "Okay, I'm about to walk off something into the abyss." It's literally like the movie. You're like stepping out into something. And I just thought, well, if I don't do it, nothing is going to change. And I had to create that moment where I just went, "Okay." And I like it was such a thing that I just can remember like taking the step. But through that, something caught me. There were absolutely my angels caught me. I made lots of decisions. I bought my beautiful home that I live now in, which is very reflective of me. And it's all that sort of stuff that when you're going through that process, you're like, "I have to look after my children. I don't have enough money. I can't maintain this life. I've gone from a double income into a single income." I was even budgeting as to whether I could buy a coffee every day because I'd got.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I am so excited about my new venture in this podcast. I'm calling it Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. You are going to get me, Kim Benoy, once or twice a month. I'm going to be getting real with you about the conversations that I have with my guests, and I'm going a little bit deeper. I'm going to bring my own personal experiences into it. I'm going to share what I've got going on in the hopes that you will share right back with me. This is not going to be me just talking in front of the microphone. I want your input. I want your participation. If you go to my show notes at the end of this episode, you'll see a support the show. That is where you can subscribe to Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. For only $5 a month, you're going to get this extra bonus content once, twice a month, and we're going to talk about what's really happening in midlife. I'm going to share my experiences. I'm going to get real. I'll probably get a little vulnerable. I'll be sharing things I don't normally share. So please subscribe so that you can get in on the founding members of this new Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. I'll see you there.
So down to, am I going to survive? But I knew that I had to take this step. And I think that's become the fuel. And that was like 9 years ago. So it still happened yesterday. And I think we all have those moments. We just probably don't treasure them, maybe.
Yeah. We probably don't see them for what they are until a little bit
Yeah.
later. They're a turning
Yeah.
point or where you woke up and found yourself again or yeah.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
you're a nurse and you're still doing nursing.
Yep.
Is that when you started thinking about doing the health coaching as well? Or did that come later?
You know what? I have always had an interest in like Eastern medicine philosophy as well. And I think that probably about 20 years ago, when naturopathy was starting in its heyday, I could see how the benefit of combining both the Western model of care with the processes and the philosophies of something like naturopathy together would be the ultimate in healthcare.
20 years
But at
ago,
the
you were thinking that. That's awesome.
And at the time, like for me to do naturopathy was going to be another $50,000 degree and all of that sort of thing, of which I couldn't afford. My husband told me I couldn't afford, but whatever. And maybe that was something that at the time I had a small child, all of that kind of thing. But I could feel that we know when you look after people in the system, not everything works. It's a puzzle. And I think that people come to healthcare because they want someone to solve the problem for them. But the problem is often a jigsaw puzzle, and that a bit of this works and a bit of that might work and a bit of this works for whatever your scenario is. And I think that we're seeing that more and more, particularly in relation to cancer care, where you're having a lot of people who say, I'm tired of being fed poison essentially through their chemotherapy and all of that kind of thing because they realize their bodies are deteriorating so badly. But the Western model doesn't have a way to support the body and them through that process, which is where people then say, I'm just going to go completely into natural therapy. And it's kind of, that's not the answer either. You need both. You need the natural therapy to support your body to develop and strong and withstand this treatment in order to treat this toxin, if that makes sense. And I'm just very aware, like I'm emergency based historically and work in intensive care, but I've done like a lot of trauma work and now I work with a surgery team. So I work with consultants and we do general surgery, but our process now is trying to see people quicker in the emergency department and deciding whether we can support them to go home or whether they need to come in. But it is, and the system is the both systems, like globally, the systems are no longer working. Like, I think the other thing that's fueled me is that I'm like, women are so much smarter than this. Like, why are we not preventing ourselves from ending up in hospital in the first place? Now, I know that eventually we will all get there because there'll be a day where it's time to go. And even then, you should be able to decide that journey. Like, you should be able to say, okay, I'm okay. Like, I'm not doing anything illegal. I just know that I am not here anymore, kind of thing. And that's okay. And the system really struggles with that as well. It's nope, no one dies anymore, which is a whole other conversation. But I feel that from a female perspective, I just don't want to become myself. I don't want to become part of this number system and to then have to navigate because it's very complex and it's not really there for you as the individual. It's there to support a process of patient flow. And it's just fueling more and more why I want to do my wellness and my coaching is that if you're a female who you can see all of this, you want some support, and you're like going to your GP, and your GP goes, oh, don't worry, we'll just keep an eye on it. And you're, what does that mean? What are we going to keep an eye on it for the next 5 years? And I guess my natural interest is around like the Eastern philosophies, although I'm not trained in that, but I absolutely believe in it, if that makes sense. And I think also the spiritual side of things, like I think our nervous system and where we want to be as women and our feminine side, I think is really important as well. And I think that is not reflective within the system either, because The system's not there to say whether you're a boy or a girl or this, that, and the other. It's this is what's wrong with you, and this is what the treatment is. But often, what I'm now seeing with women is that they're presenting with an acute issue, but there's all this stuff that's underlying the presentation, so to speak. But the situation doesn't enable them to have that conversation to unpack that. And I guess that I have been privileged from a post-operative perspective, because we do a lot of the follow-up over the phone, and you would then have conversations with women about how's your diet going? If you have your gallbladder out, there's all this conflicting research evidence about do I eat this and do I eat like this and what do I do and how do I do this? And so we have that conversation around how are you going? What do you like? How do you tolerate? Where's your philosophy on this? Because some people just want to be told what to do, whereas other people are like, okay, thanks. I'll take that as a guide. And then they go off themselves. And I think that's where I'm hoping that my coaching is something that brings that space together to say, you can go do either way, but you're then informed, you're educated and empowered to actually make the decision you want to make for yourself so that you're embodying that person that you want to be in your health journey. And it's fueled me even more because I'm like, women, we've got so much stuff that we're carrying in our heads.
You mean I'm not
And
the
then,
only one?
no, I know. I thought I was the only crazy one going through it. And then the more I start to talk to women, and like literally last night in this theater where I was full of women, all middle-aged, all wanting to listen to Stacey Sims, and I'm pretty sure all thinking the same thing. Like we were all thinking it. And I thought, this is just so interesting because as women, I think we're also very proactive about our health. I think there is a high level of intuition that is there, but I think with that intuition comes a whole bunch of fear. And the medical system does not support that because it doesn't have the time, it doesn't have the structure to provide the answers to allay the fear of whatever the issue may be. So, yeah.
I would love to go back and talk a little bit how you said you go in for an appointment, and like, for example, my mom is diabetic, so I'm watching my hemoglobin A1C and it's going dit a bit up every time I have it checked, and oh, we're just gonna eat right, we're gonna watch it, like you said. I don't want to just watch it. I don't want to watch it go up. I want to know what to do.
I know. And it's really interesting because so your HbA1c, you would know because your mum's a diabetic, is that 3 month sugar check. And I think that too, the education, see, because you've got personal experience there, you already know what that indicator is. But I think that there is also a lot of women that kind of are like, if I'm just doing a fasting glucose, isn't that going to be enough? So that 12 hours is not actually going to budge the HbA1c, which is something like your monthly predictor of what your levels are. But interestingly, through perimenopause, see, estrogen is something that actually makes our insulin malfunction almost in some ways. So our sensitivity rises to sugar because our insulin isn't working as well as what it should be. So our receptors on our cells, like the gates that kind of allow the energy in and out of the cell, which is your insulin, is already full. And so when we're starting to hit perimenopause, what happens is that the estrogen used to be that thing that was the strong, robust that would go, yep, righto, I'll carry the insulin around and it'll shove it in all these cells. But now that strength isn't there. And so the insulin isn't getting there. It's not doing what it should be doing. We then find that we're just eating like we have always done. And then we go and have our bloods. And then the GP goes, oh, it's okay. And there's almost like this assumption because you can obviously see the road going ahead is like, why am I going to end up being a diabetic? But I don't want to be a diabetic. Like, how do I stop that right now? And I think the thing is that there is a lot of evidence around glucose and your own management of your sugar, and around not necessarily, I think, because we don't want to go into the conversation about saying, oh, you can never have sugar again. And that's something that I don't want to do that. It's because it's, well, it's nice to have. But I think the thing is that we've got to get to a point where you've got to understand where your body is sitting at the first point to say, if you're genuinely concerned that you think your HbA1c is just slowly going up, my first suggestion would always be to come back to your lifestyle and you and saying, okay, unfortunately, that you have to then really do a diet challenge and an exercise challenge for a good 3 months, if not longer, where and only you know that in yourself. Like, we all have moments where we go, I'm not doing this for the week. And then something happens, and then you go out and do something, and that's fine. But I think it's when we fall off the wagon that we then the behaviors keep spiraling.
They
And
come back.
we're Halloween, it's Halloween, and there's going to be all these little treats that are lying around that you go, I'll just have one. And we all know once you start, you can't stop. It's really tough. But I think that using philosophies like lots of protein in your diet keeps you full for longer, and it actually does start to suppress some of that sugar cravings that kind of happen. And even like we were talking about before the interview about the GLP-1 stuff that's going on, it's very interesting, and it will be something that we need to just watch. Because even though, yes, it's creating a massive change with some of the weight loss, what some of the research is now coming out is relating to our bone density and the impact on that and our muscle strength, which is a whole other conversation because of the fact that nothing's going to be a quick fix. And so the pre-diabetes is actually quite interesting because, A, not only like when we go through perimenopause, you've got a natural hormonal change that's occurring, which women have always done. Like back in the 17th, the 16th, the 15th century, if they lived that long, they would have had that hormonal change because that's just part of what your body does from a hormonal reproductive perspective. But we now live in an environment which is not the wilderness. We're not catching our own food anymore. It's not fresh. Our soil that we're growing our produce in is depleted in nutrition. We are dependent on our supermarkets and manufacturers to label things correctly, which they don't do because they want to sell a product. They don't really want to look after us. So I've noticed, even in my nursing career, I would honestly say that in the last, say, 10 years, where women having their gallbladders taken out kind of thing were always where you were fair, fat, and 40, which was just one of those things because it was, oh, I've got gallstones, and that's where you get to. Now, women are much older, still having their gallbladders out, which is not a bad thing if they need to. But we're also now seeing boys and girls who are in their late 20s having their gallbladders taken out for exactly the same reason. So they're fair, fat, and 28, so to speak, instead of being 40 and 50. Because what was put down to before was, again, a hormonal change. Whereas now you're seeing this from a diet perspective in the younger generations. And I think that as women now, where we're, okay, I've been running for the last 30 years, so to speak, living my life and holding a family together, working full time, doing what I'm doing. And then what's just happened? It's like someone's just slammed the door in your face and gone, you are not going to progress any further. And it's become really something for me as a motivator because I started to put weight on around my middle. And I was like, and it felt like it came on overnight. Like I just went,
Me
and I just
too.
went, what? And I put it down to, okay, suddenly, am I just waking up? What has happened? Have I like been naive to the subtle change of what my body's been doing? And clothes change, right? So we all wear baggier clothes because that's the fashion. And then you go, what do you mean? What happened to my shape? And all of that sort of stuff. So I became very personally, I'm not going to become one of these women. I'm not like that. And so back to the HbA1c, it's really interesting because it is very much that 3 month random marker of where you're sitting. And if we use you as a personal example, like we could say, yep, your mum, it puts you, because of her diabetes, puts you in a higher category. When people go over 40, suddenly they're at higher risk of prediabetes or insulin resistance, we should call it, more than prediabetes.
Now, is the
Well,
insulin resistance what you were talking about before, where the estrogen is lower, so then the insulin can't get into the cells? Is that what insulin
yes, well,
resistance
it's
is?
kind of bit, it's like this journey. I think insulin resistance occurs because of the fact, yes, our hormones start to decline, but we continue to eat and do and live in our life as we have done. But our bodies are changing, but our lifestyle isn't to adapt to that. So then the body develops this resistance against the way it uses its energy. So what happens is that you've probably got more circulating glucose because it's not traveling into the cell as well as what it used to. And therefore, then when you've got excess glucose, the spare insulin will then just go, okay, I'm going to store it as fat. And so it just stores it as fat. And then it goes, okay, you keep eating or you keep doing what you're doing. And then it goes, okay, well, I got nowhere else to do because all your cells are full. So we're good there. Okay, I'm just going to put this out the back. And when you're ready, it's there kind of thing. But the problem is that we then struggle to bring it from the back seat or our bottoms back out into the driver's seat where we use it as energy. And that's part of the, I guess that's where we've almost got to reset our system again. And that's what I meant by that's the struggle, because you've really got to do this for 3, 4, 5 months consistently in order for your body to start to go, oh, okay, so I'm not going to get that glucose anymore. I have to start to use it myself. And so your body actually will adjust and it will actually start to use all that spare glucose that we have around our middle. But there's a lot more research going on about the adipose, like the tummy weight is a different type of fat to the fat that we carry elsewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's considered like a visceral fat, which they call it. And it's an adipose tissue that actually has a different metabolic rate and is actually more dangerous. And it is impacting both men and women because it sits around your, like within your abdomen, and it sits around your vital organs and things like that. And so that actually is bad for your body compared to other fat that sits around your body, if that makes sense. Fat's fat. Really, but I think that they talk about if women, you know how like the exercise industry will go, no, you can't pinpoint like a type of exercise. You can't do 1,000 crunches to reduce your abdomen. And I think that your abdomen is often the last area where your weight will come off. Like you will lose weight globally across you, and then your abdomen will start to change according to what else is going on because it's starting to be pulled from your other areas to actually be utilized. But it seems to be a higher density of type fat, and it because it's attached or can be attached to your vital organs, it's more dangerous for people in the long run. Yeah, I find it quite fascinating, and
I
I
can
like
tell.
using myself as a guinea pig because I go, oh my God, what happened? And I've always been the active person. Like, I love my hiking and I love running and I do all of that kind of stuff. But I also go through phases where I feel like I've just hit the wall and I could be months before I get back to my energetic self again. Like, I feel like I'm crawling through the mud, even though I'm still going to the gym and I'm still doing what I'm doing. So I completely get it. And that's where I think the medical system doesn't have capacity to cope with that. And they look at women, they go, look, it's just your hormones. You're just going through a phase. And then they send us off. And I think women like ourselves are genuinely interested in being the, give me the ball so I can run with it. I don't have to run beside you and wait for you to pass the ball to me. Like, I want the ball now. And I think that the more of us that start to have these conversations and be honest with ourselves, that's the other thing is that I know we all like to think that we've got our hand on everything and we're under control. Like, I think it's just life. Like, it's okay. And I think that the more we can empathize and empower one another to find that spark that sort of keeps us going, I think that now, anything that we do, it's not about your beach body for this weekend. It is actually about your 90-year-old self that you want to be really proud of and saying when she looks back and you go, you know what? I made those changes 40 years ago and I'm living the best life I can do now. Because you still want to be able to go and do whatever it is that you want to do. Yeah. Does that kind of, did that, I know I went very long-winded there, but I don't know.
That's
Did that answer?
yeah,
Question.
that was a great conversation.
Sorry.
was very
I can be.
helpful. No, that's awesome. It's just there's so much information. It's hard to know where to start, what to do first. Do you have any suggestions for the listeners for that, Sharon?
Yes, I know. Well, I think the first thing is that I think we have to get honest with ourselves. Okay. So the very first thing, and it's not about criticizing ourselves and berating and going, oh my God, I've let myself go, or I didn't think I'd let myself go, but now I've done that. Because it's not about that. But I think the first thing that we have to do is go, I'm not comfortable with what's happening to me. And I want to take more control over this. So that's the first thing I think we need to actively do. And then when you try, and I completely agree with you, the navigating the amount of information that is out there, and a lot of it can conflict depending on whatever the conversation is that's going on at the time. And I think that the thing is that I, like you've done, where I think we all need to go and have our bloods done. I think we all need to go and do our fasting bloods. And then from there, I think Stacey actually highlighted four pillars for perimenopause and management. So she highlighted the stress, the importance of sleep as your first pillar. I don't know if I've actually introduced her as our conversation right now. So this is Dr. Stacey Sim. So she is an exercise physiologist who is from the US. I thought she was from New Zealand, so I was trying to claim her, but I couldn't. I think she's married a New
She's ours,
Zealander.
haha.
Yeah, I know. I was like, damn it, she's from the US. But she is fascinating to listen to because she herself has always been a professional athlete. She has done a PhD in all sorts of physiology points of it. And what she's now discovering is there is no adequate research that supports women's health and our changes. So, what we're now seeing is we're being, I guess, assessed against a medical male model that has always been researched. So, it's only in the last 30 years that they're now starting to see that women, so back in like the mid 90s, like that's not that long ago, that women are now included in some of this research study. So when women go, oh my God, I'm finding this so conflicting, or they go to a PT and the PT says to you just need to do this and you just need to eat this and then you'll lose the weight. It's, you know what? It doesn't, and you want to throw a barbell into their face. I get it. And it's, I'm not that stupid. So I think the thing is that A, we've got like more of us are living into this age, right? More of us are living longer. And I think that we're the generation now who've actually been very active in our lives and are probably doing the transition between I'm not prepared to accept life as this, or I don't want to do this anymore. This is not how I perceive my life to be, all of that kind of thing that's going on. The next thing is that, yeah, we've unfortunately stuck a bit with this research. And if you're somebody who's, I'm not going to do anything unless it's research-based, you're stuck because the evidence is only new and it's evolving. So my suggestion to people is work on your sleep and look at your sleep hygiene. So that's like setting up regular times to go to sleep. That means getting off your phone, your laptop, all of that sort of thing about 2 hours before you go to bed, and that your bedroom is set up for sleep or the other nice activities that you can do. But the idea is that you're not going to bed with your laptop on your lap, you're not watching television, you're not on your phone catching up on your social media, you're not doing any of that because that's different light and it's different messaging to your brain. Then the other pillars that she talked about was obviously about your movement because that's the next thing. So your nutrition is obviously very important to fuel your body, but she talked a lot about movement and strength training or resistance training. So she's one of the first women that's actually now starting to research into the fact that she talks a lot about HIIT training and about lifting heavier weights, which is an area that I myself have to get into because I get a bit bored when I walk into the weights room. And she talked about the psychology of how women approach exercise and how, like, when you go to a gym, for instance, they will automatically sell you into classes rather than the weights room. And that's a paradigm that we've been sold into, that we then have to have the energy to go, no, I'm going to go into the weights room as well. But women who we haven't been brought up into the, yeah, I've got to go and work out because I want to feel better. It's been t sent to us that, oh, if you work out with weights, you're going to bulk up, which is the direct opposite to what women want to look like. So she talked about, in fact, we need to be lifting resistance weights, and we need to be training to do that. And also then doing HIIT training, which is that high intensity training. And she actually said that the best time to exercise for women to lose this belly fat is first thing in the morning, but you can't do it fasted. See, another whole other conversation. Yeah. So women need fuel in their bodies to exercise because of our hormones. But we again, because of the evidence and because of the research, because of the conversations, if you listen to people like Peter Attia, you hear all of these wellness male coaches that talk about training and fasting. There, she actually did a beautiful sentence last night about the difference between fasting and what is she, time limited eating, she called it. So the difference is for women and our hormones. So, our hormones are sacred to us and help manage our nervous system. And we've got one that actually is part of the fight and flight, which is where, we're being chased from the tiger or the thousand emails. Like our nervous system can't differentiate which one. But we've then also got a parasympathetic nervous system, which is our calming system. And that's the system we need to turn on to go, okay, I'm good now. I'm going to go to sleep, that sort of thing. And she said the problem is that as women, we've been awake since 5 o'clock. We've been at the gym, or we haven't been to the gym yet. We've fed all the kids. We've rushed to work. We've run all these meetings. We're communicating and we're negotiating all day. We come home, we continue to negotiate with our family. And then we're like leaping into bed to go, right, I've got to go to sleep. And so she was, yeah, go now. Off. And we all know that doesn't work. So what she talked about was women work better under a time restricted fasting process rather than fasting where you are still trying to function in a fasted state. So the idea is that you actually eat earlier in the evening and then you actually don't eat again until the next morning, which is much more sustainable for all of us. And it's like that 12 or 14 hour period, depending on what you're doing. But then also before you go and exercise, that you need your body to know that it's had something to eat. So it will actually perform better for you. Because otherwise, if it's still sitting in a fasted rate and you've had like black coffee, for instance, so you've had nothing in the coffee and you're then going, okay, now I'm going to go and train. Your body is already in a state of stress, or you then go and exercise. So all you're doing is layering that stress, and then our bodies then out of that then store the fat. You'll keep making me run these kilometers and I'm in a famine and you haven't fed me. So I'm just going to store anything that you put into me because I don't know when you're going to do this to me again. And so that's why women struggle with, whereas men can put on weight and then they lose it like in a nanosecond. It's like we are so much more complicated, and our wiring and the messages that we send to our brain and the way our brain then reacts to what we're doing, it stores this stuff because it's, oh my God, am I like now crossing the Sahara Desert? Like it doesn't know that you're just at a desk having a meeting. So I think that this is where we've got to become a bit more strategic in what we do each day. And that's where your intuition of how you feel, having something to eat in the morning and not going hours and trying to live your day in a fasted state or just on coffee. Like she was the one that kind of started talking about putting a bit of protein powder into your coffee before you go to the. So I know if I'm going to go in the morning, I don't want to eat like a meal, but I've become very conscious of just making sure I have a bit of protein powder that I mix with my coffee, and then I will have like my almond milk or whatever I put into it, sort of thing. So it does feel a bit like you feel a bit more sustained that way. And it does mean that if you give it to yourself about half an hour before you start to train, you actually can feel that different energetic change, that you've got some reserve there to actually push harder. So it means that then what you're actually doing at the gym then is more effective because you're actually got the energy there. And so you push harder and so you burn more.
Sure, that
Does that
makes
make sense?
sense.
And then you're supposed to then eat within that hour to hour and a half post that, or it might even be 45 minutes, I think. I never get it in that time frame, but you're supposed to eat quite quickly because your body's already using and consuming that. So what it's doing is it's saying, okay, I've got to refuel my muscles, I've got to refuel my system. But once all of that starts to slow down, anything excess that you're starting to eat just gets stored again, because we're then in perimenopause because our cells aren't taking on all of that glucose that we know that we're supplying ourselves. So then it takes it back to that point of, if you really actually try and eat cleanly for 3 months, where you genuinely are saying to yourself, I'm not eating processed food, where you're just genuinely doing good protein, fruit and veggies, like good fruit and veggies. And fruit is good glucose. That's the other thing that gets said is don't eat any fruit. And I'm like, oh my God, because it's attached to the fiber. And that's another conversation. There's a whole bunch of stuff, but I think if people genuinely got honest with themselves in the first place, and sometimes that does take putting yourself in different circumstances, I think too, because I think if I talk about myself in the hospital, a lot of the nurses will all carry extra weight, right? Because they're doing shift work and they're doing an amazing job and they're giving all the time, right? And that's what we are in our phase of our life. You're sandwiched between your children and your parents, so you're giving everybody else. So you get this false sense of, oh, I'm actually healthy. I'm not doing too badly compared to what I see around everybody else. But if you then put yourself into a different social circumstance where there's still people the same age, but they're doing something completely different, you might actually then go, oh, actually, when I look at these healthy people, perhaps I'm not as healthy as I thought I was. And so it's just that gentle little, okay, all right, I thought I was doing okay. And you're not doing badly. It's just that if you genuinely want to be healthy, you have to be honest with yourself. And I think that we can lose weight. I think we can look amazing. I think we can really glow, but we really have to start with what am I prepared to do and where am I happy? What is the line that I draw in the sand to say, what do I want to be and who do I want to be? And to accept that maybe there is a gap, maybe there is this gap. And I think that we need to stop thinking that if I just do a 12-week challenge, my life will be better. Because now it's not about the 12 weeks. This is about the forever kind of thing. And then the sugar part of it is not really that, like I said earlier, you don't want to can that out of your life forever because that just makes you probably quite miserable. But it's like using it to go, okay, I'm not using it now as a survival strategy for my energy. What I'm doing is it's a treat. It becomes a treat for me if I feel like it. And then it's only a treat if you've already had a meal, you've eaten, and you've allowed digestion to occur, because probably what you'll find is that you actually don't then crave it because your nutrition is working or your digestion is working differently. Whereas if you have sugar as a survival mechanism or because it's available and you're eating it on an empty stomach, then that just goes straight to your butt. Essentially, like they say, a minute in the mid, what is it? A minute in your mouth and the rest of your life on your hips or whatever that
Yeah, a
saying is.
minute, past your lips on your hips or something. You
Yeah.
might as well just paste it onto your butt. It's just going to end up there anyway. What you say makes so much sense, and it I feel like it would be really helpful to be in community with other women who are doing this or who want to do this or have a
Yes.
coach like you or both, probably.
Yes,
So
yes.
tell us about your coaching and how you work with women. Do you work with men too?
No.
Just women. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. I think if men are the partner of a woman that's going through the program, I think that's great because they are their cheer squad. I decided not to take on men because I think men's psychology is very different to women. Yeah, and their requirements and the world supports them already. Do you know what I mean? Like if
Yes.
they actually wanted to get off their bobots and do something,
Yeah.
then they can do it. The avenue is there. I think for women to navigate is harder, which is why I think the coaching becomes important because, yes, you still know to go to the gym. You might still need a PT, and you might even have a dietitian that is somebody that's in the background. But I think sometimes the benefit of having a coach is that you're navigating the flow of your river, sort of thing, like a piece of salmon that you're like trying to jump between this rock and that rock. And then you're having days where in your mind, you've completely talked yourself out of something. And I think that's where the coach can go, no, wait a second, why did you think that? It's an objective conversation and a discussion around, okay, who cares? Start again next week. Tomorrow is a new day. And I don't think we have enough people. We don't have the cheer squad in our lives, which is where I want to be. I want to be your cheer squad to say to you, okay, who cares? Yeah, your PT's going to rant and rave at you. Whatever. Don't listen to them. Like, start again tomorrow or start next week. And we've got to get out of the, like, I've started my own philosophy is my week starts on a Saturday rather than Monday because of the fact that I work all week. So my Saturday, I know, is a weekend, but I decided that's when I do my big training sessions and I also set myself up for the following week and then I kind of plan what my week is. So I don't already have that mental, oh my God, it's Monday, and I've already fallen off the treadmill because I haven't even started. That's one psychology that I think is really important for women is that you pick a different day to start your week, so to speak. But I think it's also you need someone who's in your corner. You need someone who, whether I believe what you're doing is correct or incorrect, if you're passionate about this is something that's really important to you, then it's up to me to support you to get there. And I don't think we have enough of those people in our life, or you don't find the authenticity, which is what I'm trying to create within my world. So I do have a program which I'm just launching called Awaken Her. And so it's really that stepping stone into a signature program. But I think that for women who are starting and going, I don't know what this means and I don't know what this looks like, Awaken Her is really an 8-week program. You have contact with me, but we only do face-to-face coaching like this probably every fortnight because I've realize that when I did some of my own coaching, a week goes really fast, and you're already setting yourself up for failure because you feel like you haven't done your homework and you're about to have another session, and you're like, but wait a second, I still didn't get whatever I did you told me to do 3 weeks ago. So I already know that I don't want to set up a program where people already feel like they're failing, if that makes sense. So the idea is that you have 3 or 4 contact with me and we do like a one-to-one coaching on where you're at and where you're settling, and then you go from there. So the 8 weeks is actually the whole time, but you then also have emailing and all of that kind of thing. And I think sometimes people just need to know that someone's in their corner and they give a shit. Pardon my French. I don't think the system anymore is there. And if our health system could give us preventative measures as part of it to keep people out of hospital, oh my goodness, would we not help survive this crisis that's now occurring around the world?
Wouldn't you
So
think?
I just want to be one of those people. I also have a Facebook group that I've called Eternal Her Collective, which people are very welcome to join. I'm still trying to understand Facebook because I really like Instagram. And so I think you have to join me as, and I think I'm Shazzy Nielsen on Facebook, or I think you can just look up Eternal Her Collective and request
To join.
membership. And I And that's where I am really developing this conversation that people can say, what about this? And what about that? And I want that to happen. I want it to be a two-way conversation where people, and it is only like within a Facebook. So, yes, it's public in the Facebook, but it's not public on Facebook, if that makes sense, in that if you want to ask something specific, I think that's a nicer channel. It's free, and anything that I'm doing or going on, and my blogs and things like that, because I love writing and I love my photography. So I tend to find that my posts can go a bit wayward in some different ways, but I think that's just part of the expression of who I am, so that people can see I'm not being completely clinical. I think it's important that it's about, yes, you've got clinical understanding, but it's how do you put that into everyday life and reality so that you can continue to live this beautiful, glorious opportunity that we have.
Yeah, I love that. Being a nurse, you have that medical background and you've mentioned research quite often, which I love. But then you have that holistic aspect too. And the combination of all that, I think, is beautiful. So I love what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
I love what you're doing through the podcast, and I think having those conversations and allowing people, I think it's important. I know my journey is sometimes you are happy to invest into different things to look after yourself, but I think sometimes I think in our heart we need to listen and try and connect to people before we spend the money. And I feel that I'm one of those people myself where I love to listen to podcasts. I'm very much a person who goes on my walks and I put a podcast and I listen to, and just listening to people's voices and what they're saying and how they rationalize, I think is so much more important than all the flashy imagery that kind of gets put on, I think, through social media. So I think that what you're doing and how you're generating those conversations for women and trying to meet their needs, I think is amazing. You know,
Thank
that's a
you.
really beautiful thing to do too.
Thank you.
So
I'm trying.
I
I
know
know. We could just keep talking forever, but before we say goodbye, is there any one last little tip or information or message you want to give the listeners, Sharon?
You know what? I would like them just to love life and find their passion. And if they want more access to me, then they could follow me on my social media. So Eternal Her on Instagram or Facebook. But I think the thing is that part of the glorious time of our life now is to allow themselves to surrender to the opportunities and to really give themselves some space, to find space in their day or their life where they can actually allow her to talk to her, them. And that's why I called my business Eternal Her, because we all have this beautiful little girl that's in us that we've suppressed for most of our life. And we've just got to give the space. We've got to find that space. And I think, unfortunately, we don't do that until we have crisis in our life. And I think, you know, your whole podcast, you know, about courage, I think the most courageous thing we can do to ourselves is say no and to find space.
All right. Sharon, this has been amazing. And I know that we will talk again soon because we have plans to do that. So, so thank you so much again and take care of your beautiful self.
I will. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Midlife with Courage podcast. If you liked what you heard, I would love it if you would leave a review. Until next time, take care of your beautiful self.